Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Unemployable Podcast. Today we're doing something a little bit different. A lot of you guys have been loving our Friday podcasts where Mark, James, Adam, and I banter about what's happening in the world during that week, what's happening in our businesses. And our property podcasts are becoming more and more popular. So we thought, you know what? I think we should be doing a property podcast just around what we've been doing in our lives. And we've got a special guest that's going to be joining us. Now, we're going to be doing this at the moment once a month. And we think it's going to be a great idea, something a little bit different. Again, we haven't done this before. So this is going to be the first one. And we have a special guest who's been with us before, Kevin Dooney from the Future Housing Task Force. How are you, Kevin?
Good, thank you.
Good. This is going to be very interesting because you get up to a lot of stuff in the real estate market, right? You're doing a lot of builds at the moment. For those of you guys that don't know who Kevin is, he's got over 40 years of experience in real estate. They call him an Australian housing futurist. I don't know if he's named that himself, but I found it online. So it's got to be something serious. He's an expert in smarter, smaller housing. And he's done over 20,000 property transactions and sold over $2 billion worth of real estate. So this guy knows something about real estate that we don't. He brings a lot of wisdom. He's witty. And for those of you guys that haven't watched his original pod, make sure you watch it because there's heaps of value in that. And again, we've got Carson, who's went from literally carpet cleaning 4 years ago to now doing over $100 million worth of land deals. He's our business partner in Unemployable Property. And this is going to be a really, really good session.
Now, I'm looking forward to chewing the fat each month and should be good.
We got Shannon here, but he's in silence at the moment because he's running a little bit late. So we thought we'd start without him and he's going to be chiming in probably halfway through. Now, I wanted to discuss a few different topics, right? In today's pod, I want to talk about how home values are rising again. I want to talk about this new 5% deposit scheme and how the tradie shortage is really pushing a lot of costs in the construction industry up from where they were and where they are going. But first, Kevin, tell us a little bit about you and what you've been up to over the last little while in your business, just so for people that don't know who you are, get a little bit of an understanding. Give us a little bit of a 5-minute rundown on what you've been up to over the last, you know, month, 40, 6 months.
40 years? Next last 6 months, something like that?
Yeah.
Sure. The Future Housing Task Force is our main body that does all the experimental stuff. It's where we test stuff that is not possible to do. So we do it on our own block of land, might test it on somewhere like Russell Island or where we can get away with something that you normally can't get away with. And then once we test it, we think, okay, that's going to work. Let's do it that way. Because you see, the problem with an idea, it's like a slippery fish. It tends to get away on you. So you have to find a way of creating something real from just an idea. And so that's what the Future Housing Task Force is all about. Obviously, smarter, smaller spaces are our thing. We started with the smarter, smaller home way back in 2009. Over 1,000 of those were deployed within 6 months, showing that you can create affordable housing, doing it right. The house we created had no wastage, whereas 10% of a house today ends up in a bin and recycled into garbage. So fundamentally, we waste 10% of the cost of a house just in trash. So by designing the house differently, the task force was able to save money at the same time, keep stuff out of the bin. So that's what we do. We look at the long term. If you like, every problem in my life has always been a great idea. So we like to test them first and then see where the problems may be. So that's kind of what the task force does. More recently, we were in the chair with council here at the Gold Coast to talk to them about would they allow us to build a rooming house on the Gold Coast. So they put us in touch with the infrastructure teams and the planning teams. That was about a week and a half ago. We've got a client that owns a block of land in Ashmore that said, I will build a rooming house if you can get this done as a case study. And we've given the council the opportunity to do that. And then again, last week we met with the state government to talk to their planning teams about the fact that they've only got a 2-year moratorium on rooming houses, which is up in December. So that's up for renewal, which means it could end or it may not end, subject to the current council or current state government ruling. So there's lots of exciting and scary stuff happening out there that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're in a crisis when we're supposed to be building, you know, 240,000 odd houses a year, give or take, and they're not building anywhere near that amount. And then we wonder why Australia is in a what we call a housing crisis. And if it's not for people like yourself that are coming up with different ideas and different strategies on how to help the first-time home buyer, how to help the investor get in the market, there's not going to be many other options people are going to have other than looking overseas or looking at alternative investments. I read something in an article that said there's more people under 35 that own Bitcoin than own a home.
Yeah.
Right. And in my opinion, that it's a problem because of the affordability.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, but you can't go and buy $1,000 worth of a home. And this is why we thought it would be amazing to have you come on and banter with us once a month on these podcasts, which I think we're going to be releasing every Wednesday after our discussions yesterday, the meeting that we had. And it's just amazing to think that an average person cannot afford an average home in the country that they were born in.
Mm.
And it's people like you that are trying to solve this issue, but it doesn't come without the issues that you have from governing bodies and councils, and it's not so easy, right? But I guess I don't want to dig too much into the whole affordable housing on this podcast. I want to talk a little bit more around home values rising, and why are they rising, in your opinion?
You know, you can probably bring out that old chestnut that the old supply and demand game. I mean, we've got to look at Australia as a unique place. If you look at Woolies and Coles, that's pretty well a monopoly in Australia. If you look at now the development industry, Stockland's just bought out Lendlease, which means it's pretty well a one-horse town now. So fundamentally, the issues are the fact that we've got a lot of people wanting to buy stuff that only a few people have for sale. That's obviously the supply and demand side. The other issue is we're the most governed country in the world. So we've got more governance than anywhere else on the whole planet, based on our population and based on the number of people involved in that. It takes us roughly 15 years to get a major subdivision approved and developed. So that by the time we get one title, we've lost the same period of time as it would for me to breed a child, put them in high school, and have them in grade 10 by the time I get a title. So that's probably a new record for how long it takes to get something done. And then it just continues. We've got more town planners in Australia involved than we have any other field. It's quite remarkable. So basically, we've got a lot of impediments, if you like, as to how we can develop something. There's no certainty. I mean, if you look at the new home industry as an example, the London Times has just released a paper that says that only 69,000 first home buyers can actually be approved in Australia, even though we'll do the 5% deposit and all those things. But the banks have a certain criteria, and that criteria means that who wants to be a millionaire, because that's the price of a first home these days, the bank will say, well, I'm sorry, but you're only approved to 600,000. So fundamentally, even if you are a first home buyer, even if you can get 5% deposit, it's still a problem in terms of, can you qualify? And according to the data, 69,000 people qualify today.
Most people, when they're investing in real estate, are buying today and holding for 10 years, hoping that the value of your property is going to go up. Other people are buying negatively geared properties for tax purposes. Let me tell you, what Kevin Dooney and the High Yield Property Club are teaching people is how to invest in rooming houses. They're building hundreds of rooming houses every year. What's a rooming house? It's a house with five separate rooms, with their own kitchenettes, with their own bathrooms, and five different people live in these houses. If you want to know more about this type of real estate and this type of investment structure, click on the link above the comments or go to www.unemployable.com.au/high-yield-property-club, and Kevin and one of his team will get in contact with you guys to discuss this type of investment. You know, this is about 2 weeks ago now, we interviewed one of the top demographers in the country. We haven't released that podcast yet. And he said one thing, and he said, Australia is designed this way. High property prices in Australia is designed this way.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he means by that?
What he probably means by that is that if you just look at housing as a business, the Future Housing Task Force is about one thing: affordable housing, getting people, more people into housing. Now, I know for a fact that the problem with that is there's no money in that. So I spoke last time on a podcast, which got me into more trouble here than Flash Gordon and the early settlers, about a whole bunch of things that get in the way. Banking is one of those. But the other one is that a first-time buyer buys a house in, say, a place called Yarrabilba, which is a suburb 50 kilometres out of Brisbane. Now, they'll pay about $800,000 for that, and there's about $270,000 in taxes that the various levels of government will get back from that. So that makes more money than mining in Australia. So that answers that question as to what that demographer's talking about. The second issue on that is that if I buy a house in Clayfield for, say, $1.8 million, if I could, I'd pay maybe some stamp duty of $106,000 on that, and that's it. So when you buy an established house, there's no great taxes other than stamp duty. But when you get into a new home, that's big money, yeah. $250,000.
And in my opinion, I believe it's designed this way because there's a lot of wealth. The majority of Australians' wealth is held in real estate, right? Like you go into the US and other countries as an example, and a lot of their wealth is distributed in a lot of different assets, mm-hmm. right? Stocks, bonds, yep. these types of things. But mm-hmm. like real estate is like a national sport in this country. And there's, like in my opinion, it's designed this way because they got to keep it propped up, because if for whatever reason there is a crash, right, or there is that black swan event, mm-hmm. and property prices go down dramatically, we're in big trouble in this country, because again, majority of people's wealth are in real estate, and that also makes sense to me. What are your thoughts, Carson?
I look at it, I see a lot of politicians want to get voted in, and at the end of the day, developers are the whipping boys and girls of, you know, as well, because people don't want to see the big development next door. And like I'd remind people when we're knocking down, you know, an old house or trees, and oh, that's really sad. I was like, well, the developer literally did that for you at some point in time, you know. So I think we just don't have enough. And so you get that backlash back to the MPs, and they aren't exactly, and then it filters up. We don't have enough zoned dirt to actually go do what we need to do. And it's just a supply and demand yeah. issue for me. Like, I obviously there's all the things that you mentioned, which is probably goes a little bit deeper, but for me, we just don't have the supply that we need to do what we need to do. And then obviously you got all the other restrictions, like, I mean, we're probably doing the most affordable units on the Gold Coast. We got a little block up in Upper Coomera that we're going to do. It's a medium density site. They're going to do, I think it was 12 four-bedroom units, four-bedroom townhouses. We're going to do 32 one-bedroom units. And I had a look on the Gold Coast, brand new stock under 750,000. Nothing came up. Not one property for sale, one bedroom. There's some secondhand stuff, but anything new, there's nothing. We're doing 50 square meter one bedroom units, and sure, that doesn't go to all of the market, but it does go to a piece of the market that's still needed. And gee, it's pretty sad when you think about 750 grand, you're lucky to get a two bedroom one bedroom yeah. unit. That's not much, yeah. you know.
I think there's another point you can make there. 50 years ago, when I first started in real estate, we created a thing called a covenant, and that covenant said that developer's proudly developed this piece of land, but on that piece of land, you're not allowed to legally build anything other than a four-bedroom brick home. Now, we've been pushing that barrow now for 50 years, whereas 90% of all estates have a covenant, which means you can only build a four-bedroom home. So you only have to look at it quite simply, that if all you're allowed to build for the last half a century is a four-bedroom home that has two Kawakom lockup, that has an ensuite, a family room, roughly the minimum size you're allowed to have is 180 square meters. That's the smallest you can do. Even though the council says the smallest you could do might be 60 square meters, the covenant is the covenant, and you can go to jail or to court for breaching that covenant. So when you look backwards from there, then if you produce only that, that's not a diversity of housing. And so our biggest problem in regards to your earlier question about why we have this such a high level is because we treat our real estate in Australia like playing cards. The ads that the banks used to do in the 80s were the guy next door's got a boat or he's got a big caravan. And he got that because he used the equity in his home to get that holiday, the equity in his home to buy the jet ski or the big truck or whatever. And so we were more or less taught that the house was the thing that gave us the quality of life. Stay in debt, keep borrowing money, and it'll always go up. So that's why Australians do that. We've got this thing about it being a trading card rather than our shelter.
Yeah. You know, like, it's amazing to think that our national property market is worth about $11.4 trillion, right? Which is about four times Australia's GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about that for a second. Four times Australia's GDP is what the property market is actually worth today if you were to add it all up together. And I've had people 5 years ago, 10 years ago, last week telling me, oh, the property market's going to crash. The property market is going to correct. And to me, it's basic economics, basic supply and demand. And some of these numbers may not be exactly accurate. So 240,000 houses a year, they reckon they're building about 180,000. Whether that's true, whether that's not true, if it's within 10%. That's 60,000 houses not getting built that need to be built based on the population growth, based on immigration, based on demand. What happened in COVID, right, when toilet paper ran off the shelves? If you didn't have toilet paper, you'd be paying whatever it cost to get a toilet paper roll.
Mm-hmm.
Basic supply and demand. If one person has all the rolls and 10 other people don't, you're either going to wipe your ass with your hand or you're going to pay $10 for a roll. It's basic supply and demand. And this is what's happening. And it's literally pushing people out of the market every day. And this is why we're so passionate talking about these topics so people can start waking up and getting a better understanding on some of these stats and figures so they can figure out what they need to do to get into the property market. So when we're saying like home values are rising again, right? This is from ABC. In August of 2025, right? This is last month, right? So quite relevant data. National home values rose 0.7% in August. Strongest monthly growth since May last year due to buyer optimism, decreasing interest rates. Of course, it's buyer optimism. Improving wages. I'm not sure if many people agree with that or not. And low supply push growth. But that low supply is here, in my opinion, for a very long time. But people think 0.7%. Well, to take 0.7% and times that by 12, right? That's 8.4% a year. So if I own one property and it's worth $1 million, right? And that sustains, that means your equity has just gone up $84,000, which is, I'm not sure what the average income in Australia is right now, but it's probably more than what you've just made in equity is more than, what someone's making in 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the figures that people will start looking at and going, how do people have a chance to actually buy in this country, right? Like if you're on an average wage, there's only so many things you can do. Right, whether it's fractional ownership, you know, buying with others, JVs, these types of things. But an interesting thing that's come up recently, which I want to talk about, is the 5% deposit scheme, because this is a thing that's helping first homeowners get into the market. Now, I've got some data here on what that is. Now, for those of you guys that don't know what the 5% deposit scheme is, basically, the government's come out with a new scheme. It was supposed to be for January 2026. It is now starting October 1st, 2025, which basically the time of recording of this is 2 weeks from now. So if you're a first-time home buyer, you'll be able to pay a 5% deposit on a property, but you have to be a first-time home buyer. Usually you need to put a 20% deposit down. So the other 15% is being guaranteed by the government. Now, I want to make something very, very clear here, that that other 15% doesn't mean that the government owns the property with you. They're just guaranteeing it. So there'll be a certain amount of lenders, most likely, that you'll be only be able to go to. That'll probably be on the government's panel to make sure everything's kosher. And there's new caps as well. So in Sydney, 1.5 million up to Melbourne, 950, Brisbane, a million, and regional centers, right? So I'm saying Melbourne and regional centers, Brisbane and regional centers, which is the Gold Coast, Perth, 850,000, Adelaide, 900,000. Now, you cannot, you're a first-time home buyer or someone who hasn't owned a home in Australia for the past 10 years. What are your guys' thoughts in regards to, I'm in two minds. I think it's great helping first-time home buyers going, hey, I got 50 grand, but I don't have anything else. Oh, sorry, I forgot one thing. And no mortgage insurance, which adds up to tens of thousands of dollars, because the mortgage insurance just gets dipped into the mortgage, and then you're paying obviously interest on interest over the life of the mortgage. I'm in two minds. One, I'm like, I'm in the property market, so I'm like, this is amazing, right? Because I'm not a first-time home buyer. Because in my opinion, it'll just push more people into the market. You said there might be upwards of 69,000, 70,000 new first-time home buyers taking up this scheme. Well, what's that again? Basic supply and demand. If that 70,000 people are coming for that 1.5, 800, 900, depending where you are, what's that going to do to those prices? In my opinion, it'll push those prices up. And then what will happen is, if those prices go up, what happens to the $2 million prices or the $1.8 million prices? That needs to go up. And then what happens to the $2.5 million? And everything will go up. So that's my opinion. So for me as a property investor, it's great news for me. For those that are first-time home buyers that have access to $50,000 on a million-dollar property, it's good for them because they can actually get into the market instead of paying rent and pay off, you know, their own mortgage and paint the wall blue if they want and do what they need to do. But what I don't see as a good thing is for the people that still don't even have access to that kind of money, it's just going to push them out of the market even more. So I'd love to get you guys' opinion on what you guys think this 5% deposit scheme is going to do in the market. And we'll start with you, Kev.
I guess the best way to explain it is to say that the people in charge of it are only allowed a box of crayons. And so what I mean by that is there's probably 20 or 30 colors in a nice crayon box. So if I explain it like that, a town planner is only allowed to play with one crayon, and that's a pink one. And a pink crayon means that he can put a little circle around that and say that land is ready for development, subject to what we want to do with it, because it's going to have water, it's going to have sewage, and it's going to have power going past that site. And until it's got sewage, until it's got water, until it's got power, we can't put a pink colour on that land. Secondly, we don't want urban sprawl. No town planners ever want urban sprawl. They hate urban sprawl. They believe everyone should live within 15-minute cities, and they'll die believing that. So fundamentally, the problem is I'm playing with a pink crayon. So because I'm playing with that, if you do a quick assessment of it, let's assume we've got 69,000 people that are assuming that they can buy a million-dollar property. Let's also make the assumption, because the bank's now lending on an 80-20, that they can now lend to that client because they've got more equity in there with a government guarantee. That's how you can cheat the system. But the client really isn't qualified to buy, but they are. Now, let's overlook it this way. With pink crayons at the moment, we've got enough land in Australia for about 13 weeks, maybe 14 weeks. We've got about 13,000 blocks. So if 69,000 customers turn up tomorrow, we ain't got no land.
Hold on. I want to stop you there for one sec. So what you're saying, in Australia right now, we have 13 weeks worth of land, accessible land to build on before we have none?
Titled. Yeah, that's right.
What should it be? Like in a healthy market, in a fair, in your opinion, in a fair market.
Okay. Basically, What that means in simple terms is it's a bit like 2020, where you roll up into a shopping centre looking for some toilet paper. Mm-hmm. You can do what you like, it ain't there. You can try and mug someone for some, you can do what you like, but it ain't there. So that's your problem. It's not that the government can solve it by saying, let's release this. No, it's about the pink crayon. Until we can get that land sped up, until we can deliver land, or think a different way of delivering land. An example might be, let's go to an area where we can bring land on quicker. And they'll say, well, you can't because no sewage, water and power. Gee, I live with 8,000 people on Mount Tambourine. We've got no water and we've got no sewage. 8,000 people live there happily ever after. We don't want sewage and we don't want water. We like our tank water. We like no street lights. We like where we live. So you can create communities immediately if you can just get these pink crayons and tell them to put them back in the box and start thinking differently about supply. So I don't care if there's 100,000 people. If you've only got 13,000 blocks of land titled, there's your answer. What's going to happen? Well, mum and dad should buy more stockland shares because that land's going to go up in value. And so mum and dad are accidentally supporting the growth of the value of real estate by supporting someone who then spends that money on land. Well, maybe the model's wrong. Maybe we need to teach people how to get their own land quicker. Create co-ops. Do whatever you like. But this model is busted.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's why we do the development side of things. Like, is it only for new houses? Or is it for existing stock as well? Yeah, okay.
It has to create. Why? Because it has to create jobs, which creates $250,000 in taxes.
Yeah.
An established house only has stamp duty. It's not about the money. It's about the money.
Yeah. And that's the thing that does my head in. Like, if for an existing house, and someone asked me the other day, they're like, oh, can I buy one of your blocks? And I was like, yeah, you can. But as a friend, go next door, buy the existing house, go spend $100,000 on it. You'll be miles ahead.
Yep.
Because we're selling 1 acre blocks out in Logan now for pushing $800,000, where they used to be pre-COVID, you wouldn't have a five in front of it. You can still buy an existing house for around the mill. And we're talking acreage, so yeah, like that's still up because these guys are all in for 1.4, 1.5. The time they put a house,
yeah,
you know, the fencing's like $35,000 to fence an acre. You know, like it's not a cheap exercise for me. You know, that's why I like development. And that's great. You need lots of money to do property development. That's why we do the kind of creative strategies to try and get people into deals, because I just think that's a better way than, you know, being a slave to the mortgage, buying the house. I would rather get people out there trying to get into a little deal and then, you know, make a bit of cash. And then on the second or third one, maybe keep one of the four that they build or something and get ahead that way. That's what I'll be telling my son to do anyway.
Who's this guy?
Yeah. So with Shannon has just woke up, guys. The alarm has been turned off and he's decided right now he doesn't have sleep in his eyes. I've just checked. He's all right.
this beard doesn't brush itself.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. Sorry I was late. It's Carson's fault.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, what?
We were just talking about the 5% deposit scheme and how that's affecting a property prices. And I think, you know, I was talking to someone on the weekend and I said, hey, they're first-time home buyers. They're looking to get into the market. I'm like, have you guys heard about the new first? Yeah, I heard about, but you have to live in it. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, so what can I get for $1 million that's going to fit my family with four kids? I'm like, yeah, not much on the Gold Coast. So what I also think what they're trying to drive is people are going to be making different lifestyle choices. So if right now you are, you know, husband and wife with two kids and you're renting a property in on the Gold Coast, as an example, in Coomera or in Pimpama, you know, that's probably, I don't know how much that is. That's probably 700, 800, 900 bucks a week in rent now.
Mm-hmm.
So you either kind of stay there and go, you know what, I'm, you know, 25 minutes to surfers to the beach. You know, I can still live a half decent lifestyle. Or we can buy something, right? And I now need to go to Yerra Bilba, like you said, Kevin, right? Which is 50 minutes away, right? Which means you're going to be an hour away, if not more, right, from the beach of the Gold Coast, which is a big difference in lifestyle. You make different decisions when you live farther away. So in my opinion, people are going to be pushed by going, I either rent where I want to live, right? And this is what I always say to people, rent where you want to live, buy where you can afford. The issue with this is you can only buy where you can afford if you're willing to move there, because this isn't for investment. You have to be living in the property, mm-hmm. right? So people need to be making decisions on whether they're going to be doing that. And I feel this is an incentive from the government, right? For people to go, hey, you know what? I can't live in these suburban areas anymore because I can't afford to, but I want to buy a property. But now I'm going to go to, you know, the outer western suburbs of Sydney, or the western suburbs of Melbourne, or the western suburbs now of Gold Coast, which are, you know, the places like Yarrabilba and Ripley and Logan and these areas. And I think there's a portion of that will happen.
Yeah. We used to call them nappy valleys because that's where the kids had kids and they'd start new communities, urban sprawl. Now it's out at Ripley, believe it or not. That's now the name of the suburb, believe it or not, yeah. Ripley. And that's Ipswich Way. So it's like a bedroom suburb, a long way from anywhere in particular, unless, of course, you work at Amberley. But yeah, it's a real problem.
Well, and then what happens is you live within that 5 kilometer radius, right? Because in these master plan suburbs, they are building the Westfield shopping centers and you know, the Coles and the Woolies. Mm-hmm. They have everything there, mm-hmm. right? But what they don't have is certain other amenities, like being close to the beach and the fancy restaurants and you know, the metro as an example, Brisbane City and events. And this is what I mean about people will have to choose whether they, you know, want to buy that property and live a different lifestyle and get in the market because, you know what, I want a property so my kids, I can have something to pass down to my kids, or, you know what, I'm just going to keep renting and live lifestyle.
Yeah, but you see, if town planners don't want that, then it makes it difficult to get that, because town planning in itself doesn't like urban sprawl. They named it suburban, which means you're less than.
Yeah.
And so they've been fighting it since it began way back in the 60s and early, late 50s. And they believe that these people are underclass citizens. Mm. And, you know, probably 70% of all the money spent by government is in within 10 kilometres of the major city centres. Mm. Yet only 12% of the people in Queensland live within 5K of Brisbane.
Yep.
In Sydney, probably 11 to 12% within 5K of the city. Melbourne, around about 11 to 13% live within 5K of the city. But that's where the money's spent. That's where the money goes. Yeah. So it doesn't go into suburban. Mm. If you don't have a car, you die.
Yeah. And I think what people need to realize as well with all these different schemes that come out, right, there is going to be eligibility criteria. There is going to be lender assessments, right? So it's not just going to be like, oh, anybody, you know, their man and their dog are going to go and get these loans, right? Like, just because the scheme sounds very generous, you'll still have to pass serviceability tests, credit tests, and the rest of it, right? So in my opinion, they're most likely, like I said before, will be a handful of lenders that you will be able to go to that they're approved by the government. Because you got to remember, in this scheme, the government is guaranteeing the other 15% deposit. Now, why would a government guarantee and take on the risk of a 15% right deposit? They're not physically going to be putting the deposit down. I'm assuming it's probably going to just be written on a bit of paper just saying that they're guaranteeing it. But if they're guaranteeing it, in my opinion, they're not going to be guaranteeing something that they think is going to be going down in value anytime soon, yeah. Right? Because when someone puts down a 5% deposit, if that value of the property goes down by 10%, well, guess what? The government's now losing money as well. Not only is the homeowner, but the government. So there's not a massive buffer there with only a 5% deposit. So in my opinion, you know, they're guaranteeing it because the writing is on the wall. And in my opinion, property prices are going to continue to increase, you know, which is going to be creating more problems for the people that can't get in the market. And in my opinion, again, I feel like there's going to be more real estate held in less hands moving forward. The amount of people that I know, right, because I'm surrounded by people that are property investors and business owners and stuff, they own multiple properties. They don't own one or two. They own 5. They own 10. They own 20. We had a guy on here not long ago that we interviewed, podcast just went live. He's got over 300, you know, and then you have 300 people that will never own one. And in Europe is the same thing. Majority of people rent in Europe because the homes have been held in the same family's hands for years and years and years. Like, I got friends that are Greeks. They do not sell. They keep everything, right? That's why there's so many wealthy Europeans when they in this country as well, because they bought 50 years ago and they've never sold. They just keep buying and they keep holding and they keep refinancing and buying more. So
it's funny that the only time I would encourage my kids to build a new house would be to do exactly what Kevin does. Live in one room, got four other rooms, rent those out, get ahead, put your mates in them, in those, you got your own self-contained little area. At least it's paying off your mortgage, or, you know, so that makes sense. But because you got to remember, a lot of these house and land packages, we were meeting with someone the other day and she puts house and land packages together, but she's clipping the ticket for $30,000-$40,000 comms. So that's all built into on top of the margin that the developer's making and the builder's making, or they might be the same person. But then there's that comms on top, you know. So it makes sense to buy an existing house if you can get the right property. Or if you're going to do that, in my opinion, I'd be going to do something like what Kevin and the high property yield club, sorry, I've just butchered that. But high yield property club do, because then it makes sense. Because at least you're not a slave to your mortgage. That's what I like. Even $1 million now, like I don't want $1 million mortgage now.
It's really simple yet complicated. Can we simplify it?
Yeah.
What we're saying to a first home buyer is you can buy anything you like as long as it's from Mercedes Benz. It's cost you $1 million to buy your first home. We're not going to give you any other choice, because the only developers in the planet, Stockland, have a covenant that says you can build what you like as long as it's another bloody four-bedroom home. Now, diversity of housing is shot. You mentioned the Greeks. Well, when the Greeks came to West End, they'd build a six-pack and they'd live on the top floor and that was their home. And then they'd rent the other five or eight units, and those eight units gave everyone else from Greece an affordable house. And before you can look around, they're making more money than their mortgage. It's literally a mortgage-free home. In England, let's go back to Sherlock Holmes. In Sherlock Holmes, he's renting a room off a lady who's got another room down below, and she lives in the same house. You were rich if you had a house in England that had a front door, because there'd always be a side door where you could rent. In France, it was illegal to build a house in France unless you created housing for the chambermaid or the people that worked with you or for you. And therefore, you had to provide a garret, which was 19 square metres in the end. But the first one was 11 square metres. And then they wanted your chambermaid, so they built a 15 square metre one, then a 19 square metre one. And so all of a sudden, today, there is no shortage of affordable housing in Paris, because they said, if you want a plumber, if you want workers, you have to supply housing within that structure. In Europe, you had to supply housing above the shop. You had to supply housing where the people worked. Whereas in Australia, the pink crayon is for housing, the yellow crayon is for industrial, and you're not allowed to have a house on top of your industrial building. So that means a subcontractor can't have one mortgage, he's got to have two. So if he aspires to have his own factory, he can't live above that and see his kids and his family and knock off at four and have a beer and maybe shut the gates and have a go-kart track at night for the kids. No, he can't do that, because the colour of the crayon doesn't allow for it. No, the diversity of housing is the issue. 50 years of four-bedroom homes or townhouse site. Why the townhouse site? Because the government said, we don't like your density. We want 15 of the hectare, not 10. So they go, okay, let's do a townhouse site for 600 of those, and that'll get our density back to satisfy the government that we're building higher density. So that's the only reason they built townhouse sites, to increase the density. And then they started selling them, mostly to investors, which was good in the end, but they were pretty expensive in the beginning. And so that's all it is. It's just a reaction game.
We're actually against it too, policy-wise, of creating anything like that. Every time we create another room, a granny flat, whatever it is, you're paying a contribution for that.
Yeah.
So it's working against you. It's actually not Well, pushing you to do anything,
though. It doesn't matter where we go. The Vancouver special was a house built by Larry. Larry came up with an idea, the Vancouver special. It was illegal to build more than, say, a single dwelling in Vancouver. So they came up and said, okay, a basement, as long as it's 18 inches below the ground, is defined as a basement. Now we can create two houses on one block, rent one to some other family, and have one on top. The Vancouver special was so successful, they banned it. And then they went to another place in Vancouver and said, oh, shouldn't have done that. So they put a competition out to come up with a new idea. The quadplex, so successful, they banned it. And so when we get something that works, everyone gets scared that we're doing too much of it. And then they say, oh, not in my backyard, not over there either, NIMBYs and notes. Mm-hmm. And so the public themselves only want their memory of architecture. So when we start playing in the missing middles with something like a rooming house, they think, oh, the tenants on that are probably halfway house people. They're not. They're earning $1,300 a week. And they have to qualify at that mm-hmm. before the Residential Tenancies Authority will allow us to rent to them. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this definition.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, like, you look at the sizing of housing, right? Like, for anyone that hasn't been to Europe and you go to Paris or you go to Rome or you go to Milan or any of these places and you rent an Airbnb, right? And you see a few photos and you're like, oh, this is amazing. And this happened to us a couple of years ago. Great area, near everything, right? Can sleep four. Like, you walk into this thing, it is literally 40 to 50 square meters. Mm. That sleeps four people and the laundry is in the kitchen and the kitchen is in the laundry. And, you know, like, that is what's needed, right? Like, that's what we're not doing here, right?
It's illegal.
And that's the thing, like, for the market to become more affordable, it isn't 110 square meter, two bedroom apartments anymore. But the thing is, it's a catch 22 here though, Kevin. And it's this. You tell me the last development on the Gold Coast specifically, I'm not sure about Sydney and Melbourne, but I'm sure it's the same, that they're selling one-bedroom apartments here. They're not. Because it's not feasible to build a one-bedroom apartment, right? Because a one-bedroom apartment will fetch you $800,000, but a two-bedroom apartment will fetch you $1.5 million. How much more building, right, is it to create a second bedroom? You still need a kitchen, you still need a bathroom, you still need a balcony, you still need sliding doors, you still need windows, you still... So it's not feasible to build the one bedrooms here, apartments-wise, right? They're building... You go to any development now, they're not building one bedrooms. They used to build studio apartments. There used to be a thing called studio apartments. They're not building them anymore. They're building minimum two-bedroom plus studies, three bedrooms. And those are incredible costs. Mm. And this is why I like what you're doing, because you're bringing that back into the market, right? You're bringing that affordability aspect back. The reason why they built one bedrooms, right? They were the lost leaders. Apartments from 450, apartments from 500. Mm. That's gone now.
Yep.
Because you can't even, to build a 60 square meter one bedroom apartment today will cost you more to build it than what you can even sell it for.
Of course.
So they're not doing it.
No.
Whereas you can make a margin before, but you can't, which we'll get into next, is the tradie shortage and the cost pushing up these prices. But with what you're doing a similar type of thing, but in houses, right? And for those of you guys that don't know, we're not going to delve too much into it on this pod, but we're going to be doing a future pod with Kevin, talking about exactly what he does and how what he's doing, calling himself an Australian housing futurist, is trying to solve this problem, right? Is in the rooming housing, where you have one house with multiple rooms and people can live, right? Four or five people can live in one home, and people go, I know the naysayers, oh, I don't want to live with other people. Who are the Yahoos, you know, renting these places? It's everyday people that are renting these places.
Just to add to that, it's not a room either. Like, it is a little studio apartment, like you just said. They are a nice outfit when you're inside them.
Yeah.
The reality is if you go into a complex, you're still walking down a corridor. It's no different. You're walking down a corridor, a common area in these rooming houses. That's how I liken it. You know, you still get it, got to pass people there. That's exactly the same setup. And then you go in your own door and away you go.
The issue though, right, is you've solved the problem. You have a solution to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The 70,000 first-time home buyers can't buy it.
69,000 home buyers in Australia are qualified under the new 5% rule to be able to buy a house. The bank has been able to shuffle the cards and say, well, we want 20% equity. So as long as the government gives that equity, that removes the problem of the numbers. They can get more numbers. They might have to forgive their hex debt or whatever you call that these days and a few other things and push it to one side and say, really, this guy's got no debt. We'll forgive that or push it to one side just to push him through. That aside, you've still got to have a block of land to build something on. And then that developer still says you can't build anything on here except a 200 square meter house or 180 square meter house minimum. That's acceptable to a valuer because a valuer says if you build a 3-bedroom home, I'm going to value it for $60,000 less for a lousy 10 square meters. If you build a 2-bedroom home, I'm going to knock $140,000 off the value of that. If you build a 1-bedroom home, I won't even lend on that. So basically, it's one thing to solve the problem. It's the second one to have it compliant with valuation, banking values, and a whole bunch of other stuff that knocks you out of the game. The more you solve affordable housing, the less profitability there is it for the people in it. So when you're building a 30 square meter unit, as we have a shortage of in the Gold Coast that you mentioned earlier, it's still 12.5 grand a meter to build that thing, house and land, in the Gold Coast. And that's not looking at the water. That's out there in the background.
Mm.
So basically, a 100 square meter unit is 1.25 million. That whole 15 mini city thing is gone. You just can't do it. It doesn't work. Low rise is the only solution. We build 5 bedrooms on a block of land, which is 5 separate tenants with their own micro apartments. There's 2 ways you can buy real estate in Australia, joint tenants or tenants in common. You could buy 1/5 of that and own your own unit if you want, and that's going to cost you 220 grand for your first home. And that's a nice 30 square meter space with your own lounge, dining, kitchen, bathroom, whatever you want. It's just thinking differently. And we can do that right now within the rule book. But the bank will then say, I'll lend you the money on that. But if any of the other 4 default, I'm going to hold you responsible for that repayment. So again, you create a solution, you have a problem.
Yeah. What I love about that though is you're giving opportunity to someone that can afford something on their own. So if you're a first time home buyer, as an example, and you're not on this 5% scheme, but you're still a first-time home buyer, either buy a 4-bed, 2-bath home that's too big for you anyways, or you're going to buy a 2-bed, 2-bath apartment where you're not going to be able to afford because you're going to want to live near the beach. And they're not building these types of apartments in Yarrabilba. What you're doing is you're building these in areas where people are close to amenity, right? And in affordable areas. So you're not only helping that first time home buyer, but you're also helping that first time home buyer by entering the market, because they can enter the market, right? Rent one of the rooms for themselves and have the other 4 pay for the mortgage.
Yeah.
Right. And almost, I know you know the calcs and we won't go too deep into it now. But the other thing is from an investment opportunity at the same time, because you got investors putting their investor hat on going, where do I put my money? I've got money in the bank. Where do I put it? What's going to give me the best return? What's going to give me the best return on equity over time? And that's what I love about what you're doing. So for anyone that wants to know more about what Kevin's been up to over the last 10 or so years, go to www.unemployable.com.au/high-yield-property-club. And reach out to Kevin and his team and you can get a lot more information on exactly the problems that these guys are actually solving. And this is all Kevin wants to talk about. When we're together, all he's talking about is, you know, these rooming houses and the future of housing. Like, he is passionate about this. This isn't just a money grab for him. He is literally solving the housing crisis in Australia, and majority of people have no idea about this. Funny enough, I was telling you off camera, I was at a school function, a play last week for my daughter, and my wife was talking to one of the other mothers, and I was overhearing their conversation, and she was like, yeah, my brother-in-law just put us into these rooming housing accommodation, you know, investment, and we've got one over in Acacia, and it's doing so well. We didn't know about this, and I'm just hearing this, right? And this is just a person, you know, not a full-time property investor, but you could see the excitement that they actually got into the market, whether it was an investment, whatever it was. But that's the real thing of solving a problem. When you hear these outside conversations, you know that you're actually solving it. I want to say one thing before we go on to the next topic. And there's an interesting stat here. So median home price in Australia today, approximately $844,000. And as a 5% deposit, right? If you work out what 5% of 844 is $42,200. The last time $42,200 covered a 20% deposit for a property, right, in Australia, was in 2002. So that goes to show you how far the property market has come in the last, you know, 23 or so years.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe, right? Like, I sit here today and go, some of the stuff that I've sold in the past, and I think to myself, and I'm like, how is that worth that now?
Mm.
In 6 years.
You know, it's a funny thing. I got a job with a company called Stockland in 1999 because they'd sold a lousy 60 blocks in a place called Pacific Pines. I don't know what it is with developers. They always name a bloody estate after the trees they've just killed. And so that one's called Pacific Pines. You can't find a pine to save yourself there. And anyway, 6,000 blocks, 70 sales a year. And the best price they could get was $49,000 a block. So I get called in and say, you're selling 60 blocks, 70 blocks a year at $49,000. And I get the job of getting it up. And they said, what's your goal? I said, to get to 365 blocks of land a year. And they said, well, we can't sell 70. And what price can you get it to? I said, oh, probably around about 250 over the years because of capital growth that'll occur. At the moment, we're getting $100 a meter around about 1999. So 600 square meters, $60,000. This was hanging off a cliff a bit. So it was not worth that. It cost the developer $52,000 to develop the block, and they were selling them at $49,000. So it was tough times, really tough times. And so they weren't making any money. So the way we solved the problem was we created this estate over here, and we called that View 360, and that was the expensive one. Over here, we created a mid-range product. Over here, the cheap seats. We literally created a diversity of housing within different covenants. That's how we got to 365 deals. Because not everyone can buy a Merc. In fact, the top-selling car at the time was a Toyota Corolla. That was the number one car because it was affordable. We no longer have affordability. We no longer have a first-home buyer. Eddie McGuire would say, who wants to be a millionaire, and everyone aspired to it. If you're a first-home buyer, you're a millionaire. That's what it costs you to get into the thing. I mean, like Eddie McGuire, it's not even aspirational to be a millionaire. Like, that's a first-home buyer. You're kidding me. That ain't how it works.
Now, you got land as an issue. And the last topic I want to talk about is the tradie shortage and the costs pushing up prices, because that's a whole other separate issue. Not only do we not have the land, in my opinion, we don't have the people to build adequate housing.
Yeah.
Which you've got delays, lack of skilled trades. I'm building, right? I do built form stuff. Shannon and Carson do land. They're building, right? They don't build anything higher than a curb, but they're building, mm-hmm. right? They do a lot of civil work. You build more than any of us here.
Yep.
How many are you building at the moment, roughly a year?
Rooms, 400 rooms a year.
400 rooms a year.
Yeah, at the moment. Scale it up to easily 1,000 rooms a year if we could find land.
How do we solve, in your opinion, and Carson and Shannon, please chime in, the tradie shortage in Australia?
Short term or long term? There's two answers. But Australia only understands short term, so we'll stay there. There's currently 92,000 shortage of trades. Top of the list there is things like carpenters and electricians and painters, and now the new millionaires. The way we're solving it in terms of our little world is we have an immigration centre with our builder down in Tasmania, and that immigration centre is employing people from Afghanistan and other areas that are qualified trades. Why do we have to go overseas? Well, because long time ago, we decided to teach our children that the only way to get ahead was to keep them in school until grade 12, push them into university, get a degree, and do that. Whereas in my world, when we grew up, we could do anything as we liked as kids, but we had to go into an apprenticeship at the age of 15. We were dragged out of school and said, apprenticeship for you. What do you want to be? My brother was an electrician. Someone else was this. Someone else was that. We all had to do an apprenticeship. So we had a skill that represented some benefit to Australians other than a lawyer, an accountant, and other things. And so fundamentally, we gave up on our trades. And we said that that's the wrong thing to do. No one wants to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and put on their King G's and turn up. And so we simply educated our people out of that. The government then reacted more recently and said, but that's okay, AI is going to take over. We'll create houses in a shed. We'll create modular. But the problem with that is you're building the thing twice. It ain't that pretty. It's got to survive transport to a location, so it's engineered rather than soulfully created. And it's more expensive to do that. Now, the second problem is it's 12.7 months now to build a house in Australia. The Vancouver special I mentioned earlier took a whole of 3 weeks. So we're slowing things down over a year to build a Metricon home these days. That's a long time to wait as a first-home buyer. Now the first-home buyer's got an approval for $1 million house, and at the same time, I have to find $800 a week to rent for 12 months while I'm building that home. Give me a break. How are they going to do that? You know, what's the bank going to say? So you're paying $800 a week in rent. You're qualified for $1 million. The government's going to guarantee you. How are they going to find that?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
We need, and I think we need to incentivize people to get into trades. And the demographer that I mentioned earlier was saying that a lot of people skip to college and go to university. And I think that's you know, based on society, right? Oh, don't go to college. I might as well just go to university because, you know, university degrees pay more than college degrees. That's changing. Like, I've got a lot of friends that are in trades, and let me tell you, they're doing all right. They deserve every penny they get because, let me tell you,
trade, they're busted at 40. They're broke.
They're broken.
Yeah.
So they need to make their money in the early stages of life and invest wisely. So they're worth every dollar, but every dollar that they're worth is just built into the price. And this is the issue, right? And this is why places like Dubai is an example. What they're building there, you can't build that anywhere else in the world, what they're building there. If you just have a look at the scale of things that they're building is ridiculous. It looks fake. We can't even build a 20-story tower here. You know, you got Multiplex building a 25-level tower on Chevron Island. Multiplex, you know, one of the biggest builders in the country and one of the largest builders. It's a Canadian company, right, in the world.
Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah.
That's when you know the construction industry is on its knees. Because imagine the cost to build that to the actual developer.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, we need to incentivize people to go into trades. How do you incentivize them to go into trades? Don't charge them as much to actually go to trades college because it's not cheap.
No.
Right? So they're going to say, oh, I'm going to pay this or I pay a little bit more and I get a university degree.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what, I got a hex debt. Mm-hmm. If that's what they still call it.
Mm.
So incentivize them. Incentivize them by not charging them as much to actually go and do the trades. For 4 years, to go be a plumber, to go be an electrician, for 4 years they get paid nothing. Apprentices get paid nothing, right? Again, maybe change that a little bit. You know, if the apprentices get paid a little bit more, maybe they'll incentivize and go, I'm not going to be eating, you know, ham and cheese sandwiches for 4 years. Because most of these people are young adults.
You can incentivize them differently, though. You could, for instance, you could do what the fruit pickers do, where a fruit picker turns up and you offer them accommodation as part of their package. Mm. There's a way you can incentivize it by saying, we'll teach you a trade and we'll house you and we'll feed you. Mm-hmm. Room and board. Mm. And, you know, room and board's a funny line because the board used to be that they'd serve your meal on a board, literally. And that's why they called it room and board. But that the digression is such that it just means that on scale, you can house a lot of people that way. If they're apprenticeships, you can put them into a village that is an apprenticeship village where you're creating accommodation for them.
It's a lot of fun too. I all my uncles own strawberry and cherry farms.
Yeah.
And most of the labour, most Aussies don't want to work, so they have to import it. But
they have a great time.
I had an absolute ball. Yeah. You know, like we live in there and there's little dongers and we all kind of hang out afterwards. And it, like you say, it's actually, you can save a bit of money because your expenses are pretty low. You know, you just got to get a bit of food, but the board's $100 a week. And away you go. And he's still doing really, really cheap accommodation. It's the only way you can attract the stocks. I think you know, as much as, you know, some people don't think it'll work, I think you got to start thinking outside the box. Because what we're doing, if you just look 10 years down the road, it's not going to work. So it's either you import the labour or you've really got to incentivise.
And we are importing the labour through Tasmania, where we're bringing people in. It is sad that we do that. Here we are having to import talent that we've stopped creating here in Australia. It's insane.
Well, I think there's a portion of that, right? They're not incentivized properly, but at the same time, Carson mentioned something and people will hear it and some people won't hear it. And he said, Aussies don't want to work. Now, this is gonna ruffle a lot of feathers, right? It'll ruffle a lot of feathers because is that true? Like, is it just a stigma? Is it just a stigma that us people that are in, you know, business and property development, because we're on the ground and we're dealing with people every day, is it a stigma that we've created thinking that Aussies don't want to work? Is it propaganda, or is it actually that we shouldn't say Aussie, like the Western world, right? Like not many people going, hey, I want to be a bricklayer. Hey, I want to be a steel fixer. Hey, I want to be a form worker. Like those, like they're hard jobs. Like I tiled for 4.5 years. My dad's a tiler, right? Out of school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I tiled for 4.5 years. Like I'm like, is this my future? Like, can I see myself doing this for the next 40 years on my knees? You know, and I'm just like, there's got to be a better way. I don't care how much you pay me. You know, like
there's a thing called the zeitgeist, which is the spirit of the time. A zeitgeist, poltergeist was another example of geist, but spirit of time is zeitgeist. What that means is that warriors breed accountants breed poets, and poets breed warriors. We're currently in that cycle where we're probably a generation of people have had a different way of upbringing. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm saying that's just where we are in the cycle. And so that cycle means that those people would sooner not be in a trade and get blisters and other things that cause them problems. Rather, they'd sooner be in some sort of other thing. And so it is what it is. But that doesn't mean to say they're lazy. I think Australians are probably the hardest working people on the planet. The only difference in Australia is if you declare war on a small nation from Australia, if there was a public holiday, they wouldn't go. So we're pretty particular about our long weekends and stretching them out. So, you know, if Easter lands at a certain time, you can bet that's a 10-day holiday. Like, we're not stupid in that regard. We know how to stretch things. But when we turn up, we turn up. And so, no, I don't think that that's an issue. I do think we're breeding a lot of poets at the moment.
Yes.
And there's nothing I can do about that, nor am I saying that's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying that those poets will eventually create warriors when the things get tough. You know, the word parabellum means if you want peace, prepare for war. Literally, we're moving into a war footing in this particular housing crisis. It will end governments if we don't do something about it, because people will stand up and say, enough is enough. We are now at war. We're marching.
Do you guys think, and this is for Shannon and Carson as well, we need to import labor in Australia to decrease the shortage?
Without a doubt in my mind. What you said before about Aussies getting lazy, I couldn't agree more, to be honest. I know you said it with much more wisdom than what I'm about to, but no one works. Like, you look at the older guys on our side, so I work around a lot of civil construction guys and abandoned machinery and concreters. The best guys in the game are in their 40s and even some of them in their 50s, and you'll really pay for them, and you're happy to, because you're either paying for efficiency and a good job, or you're paying for lack of efficiency. It's going to cost you one way or the other, because you pay for the lack of efficiency and then you've got to bring the good guys in anyway. So, but do get a lot of complaints at work, especially when we have, I won't say the specific trade, but when we've got a lot of other workers come into site, they do have a very strong opinion on migration and whether we should have people in. And I'm actually the first to turn around and say, mate, what are your kids doing? Are they working? Are they doing a laborious trade? Or are they sitting at home and they're Instagram famous? Because we live in a fast-paced society nowadays. So no one wants to work hard in my eyes, not anymore.
Well, yeah, especially in my opinion, the younger generation. Like if I were to put me in the driver's seat, I grew up watching my dad in construction. I grew up watching my dad laying tiles, timber floors, working like a dog in the winter, in the summer. And I looked at that going, let me try it. And I'm like, this isn't for me.
Yeah,
I'm not lazy. But what, I'm very good with tools. I'm not, anyone that knows me knows I'm not lazy.
But what did you learn? What did you learn through that process though? And this is what everyone forgets. You learned how to measure. You learned about material loss. You learned so much stuff you never would have learned.
No, and I'm handy. Like you give me a hammer, you give me a saw. Like I could build things. I could do things, right? Majority of people that are in their probably, 20s and 30s today, if you were to take a big percentage, wouldn't even know how to hold a hammer. They wouldn't even have a toolbox, as an example. So in my opinion, I'm the same with you, Shannon. I think the only way to solve this crisis is that we need to import labor specifically around construction, because you said 40-50, a lot of your trades 40-50. Any of the sites that I've built and seen, majority of the great trades are in the same age group. But those trades can't keep going. The 50-year-old can't keep working at the efficiency and not at 60 and 65. So what's going to happen, right, in 10 years' time, in 15 years' time, when these guys are retiring and the new generation, the 20 and 30-year-old, and I don't blame the new generation either. This is the thing. I don't blame them because they've been born in a country where there's lots of opportunity. I can go and be an Instagram influencer. I can work online using AI. I could be a coach. I could do all these other things that weren't available before. But the thing is, people in other underdeveloped countries, right, have no other way out. They need to, I watched an Instagram post of a guy in Dubai. He's a delivery driver. And one of the guys is interviewing him going, how much do you earn a month? How much is your rent? How much is your food? How much is this? How much is that? And at the end of, and it was like 4,200 AED, which is, you divide that, by 0.40 as an example. So call that 1900 Australian, $500 a week Australian, the guy's making, right, in Dubai. But at the end of it, he goes, I still have enough left over to send home to my family in India.
Yeah.
Now, the guy's not going to be living an extravagant life. He's not eating five-star dinners. He's not doing any of that. But is he doing any of that in his home country? No. Is he probably providing better for the people in their home country, in his home country, than if he was living there? Yes. So we have to think, how can we work fairly with overseas labor, right? And not just go, oh, that's slave labor. Like, we're giving them the choice to come, right? It's their choice to come and say, hey, I'm willing to work for X and still, send money home. Like, I remember growing up in Canada, the tobacco pickers, right? Tobacco fields in Canada where we're from, massive tobacco fields. Every single tobacco picker is Mexican. Yeah. Every single one. They give them room and board. It's the same with the strawberry pickers here probably. Except there are Mexicans in Canada, right? But there's an opportunity for them to then go and work their ass off in the summer so they can then go back home and probably chill out a little bit in the winter. Mm-hmm. We went to Greece as an example. People live, they work, the guy, one of the drivers, I was talking to him, we're in Mykonos. And we're going, I'm like, so how often are you working? He goes, I come here for 5 to 6 months of the year. And I go, what are your hours? He goes, there's no hours. It's 24/7. When I get a break and I can go and sleep for 3-4 hours, I sleep. Mm. I go, what do you do for the other 6 months? He goes, I go back home and I relax for 6 months. Mm. I work my ass off for 6 months.
Yep.
And then I relax for 6 months.
Yeah.
What's the difference? The guy, like, when you call it slave labor, like the guy is pounding the pavement, creating an opportunity for his family that he wouldn't have otherwise if he's probably working all year round in Athens, as an example, being a waiter or whatever it is. So I think there's opportunity. It's just we got to change the stigma around the whole slave labor, because we don't have enough. The reality is we don't have enough. And for the people that will sit there and complain, going, we don't need that. You developers just want to make more money. You builders just want to make more money. Mm-hmm. The reality is this. It's not just about making more money. It's about making things affordable. In 10 years and 15 years time, mm-hmm. when you're 40, 50-year-old, right, civils guy, form worker, steel fixer, retire, and you want to build a house for your kids, and your kids want to build a house, mm-hmm. and there isn't a form worker, guess what my price is as a form worker when I get in? Mm-hmm. Whatever I want it to be. Because mm-hmm. you have no fucking choice. Mm-hmm. That's what we got to get away from, in my opinion.
And that's where the opportunity lies, right there as well, for a few people that, or for the people that are willing to work hard and have a go, do those 5 or 10 years in that workforce, understand something very deeply, and then upskill yourself, learn the management side, and then learn how to expand. Mm.
You know, you've got to, sometimes if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it. I mean, for starters, you had to steal something to live here in the first place. I mean, you had to be a convict to live in this country.
Most of us.
And then they changed the rules, and then they started importing people who didn't steal something. The reason I start that way is I'm saying things like BRW did a test in 2000, and they figured out that 90% of the wealth was in people who had moved to this country to make a go of it. Australia's that sort of place where if you have a go, it's going to really pay you back. But mm-hmm. you need to lose something to want something. And when you're born in a beautiful country with the best beaches and the nicest lifestyle, it's a bit like living in Spain. They would import everything. And that was the fall of Spain. Australia is in a fall because it is such a beautiful place to live that I'd sooner go to the beach than turn up at work. Mm-hmm. And so we offer a quality of life that denies us the internal fire to get off our ass and do something.
Agree. Couldn't agree more.
And so that's part of it. Part of that mentality of the convict thing that I mentioned is they came over here with not an expectation, but a complaint. You know, why did you do this to me? It's all your fault. And we outsource our blame a lot. We blame the government for everything. We hired them. If you don't like them, you can hire another one. We know it's the same, but it's the game we play. So we are capable of creating change. Maybe if we taught people to live in Afghanistan for 5 years and then come back. You know, I'm not sure what it takes to motivate somebody, but it probably starts with a bit of gratitude to understand that this is what we have. Now, do you want to keep it? Do you want to grow this? Do you want to hand it over to your children's children? Or do you want to be the I person, the iPhone, the I all, me, not what are we creating in the future for society? When I got to this country and we were banned from coming to Australia, they rejected us because my mum and dad were soldiers and there was no real, how would we say, job offers for shooting people. And so my mum and dad had to write to 23 newspapers saying we want to be Aussies and putting the three of our children, 6, 8, and 10, as the picture, saying that the kids will make a difference because we can't. We got 23 sponsors. The Minister for the Immigration didn't tell us we only needed one. And so, you know, that's the thing. You've got to have a want, a desire to leave. And we lived in a place called England, which is shit. I mean, it rains all the time. My family's family lived in housing commission houses, and we all aspired to a better housing commission home, only to come to Australia to get a housing commission home to staff us off. And you go, hey, guys, different country. Let's get off our ass and do something here. And so the motivation of change is what creates change. So we're not motivated in Australia to change. We're not motivated. There's no benefit in getting off our ass. There's no fire in the belly. That's what's gone out, is the fire, the desire.
Sense of entitlement in some ways.
Yeah. It's a beautiful country. Yeah. When we don't want anyone else to come in, so naturally going to argue about bringing in someone from Afghanistan who's a painter. But the bottom line is we need a painter. And he's a bloody good painter. Yeah. And so why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to segue off that a little bit now, like
I'm keen to kind of just hear what where everyone's at with what they got going on, because we've got to wrap up in a couple of minutes. But Eric, what are you, where are you at with your projects at the moment? Like ours, townhouse project you've got with James, like where's that at? I know you had an RFI, has that been responded to?
Yeah, so we've got a luxury build happening at the moment. We're about a month and a half to 2 months off, which is one that we'll be moving into for a bit. That's been interesting. I've got lots of stuff happening, got people on site every day, lots of decisions being made every day. At the moment, we're deep into, you know, discussions with the landscaper on exactly setting expectations in regards to what plants we're getting and what type of palm trees and how big are they going to be and where are they going to be placed. So I had a meeting with them last week with Jen, just setting expectations, because what they do is they give you a price and then they give you a plant schedule and then they give you a 2D drawing, but landscaping is 3D. And you're kind of trying to put in your mind, okay, so this plant is going there, but what is it going to look like? Is it going to be 300 mil from ground level? Is it 2 meters high? Is it, you know, how mature is it? Is it, what color green is it? Is it a light green? Is it a yellow? Is it a dark, you know, all these things, and getting, really setting expectations. And I think that's very, very important with anything in building. It's different though when you're choosing a piece of timber and that's the timber that you're going to get, and you're going to get it all over the floor. All right, I know what I'm getting. That's your paint color. All right, I know what I'm getting. But landscaping is one of those things that is very ambiguous, and it's a big, big cost. I can't believe how much plants and trees cost in this country. Maybe we can import those too.
It's a hot topic for us at the moment as well.
We've got 72,000 trees we're planting, right?
So honestly, I feel very bad for you. So that's been quite fun. Funny enough, you know, knock on wood, got off the phone with the town planner on a development we're doing, five unit development, luxury development in Burleigh Heads, literally 5 minute walk from the Burleigh Headland, unbelievable spot, you know, beach views. Took a bit of a punt with this one, so it's a high dollar value entry, high dollar value exit, but I'm very bullish in the area. I already own some property in Burleigh, and we've had one RFI, which is a request for information, for those of you guys that don't know, from council, and we sent that back in, and we just got an email yesterday with one little change that they want, and Murray, our town planner, said, to be honest with you, this is the best DA I've seen in a year in regards to how quick he reckons we will get our DA mid-October.
Nice.
Well, which is...
That's good.
Like I'm talking from initial lodgement. We took a couple weeks to go back and forth because we really had to adjust some plans internally, but to get the external measurements correct. If it wasn't for that, I reckon we'll get this like from lodgement to finish DA in hand in 3.5 months, which is great. And I asked Murray, why do you think? And he's like, I think they like the development, they like the area, they like what you guys proposed. Mm. And this comes, I guess, with a little bit of experience and sitting down with the town planner and pre-planning and setting expectations with the architect. And we didn't push too much either, right? So we're not trying to, you know, push site coverage too much. We're trying to, you know, we're not pushing height, so it's not impact. But it's been great news the whole way, which is great. So what we're going to be doing is, as soon as we get that DA in hand, we'll get it revalued. But I've been on with the property valuer, which is a mate of mine. We're sitting down at some point this week. I think there's an email sitting in my inbox right now confirming that time. So I can say, hey, here it is. This is basically what's getting approved. Revalue this thing for us at the moment, so that way we could go back to the funders and say, hey, we bought it for this. This is what the valuers come back at. We've sat down with a few agents, sitting down with a couple buyer's agents and saying, hey, what do you think about this? We're keeping a few. We're going to sell a couple. Is there anyone interested in your database that you think would, you know, want one of these, because they're going to go quick? And there's already a couple people in the community that are interested, which is quite interesting. So that's what we're...
The sleep would not be out of your eyes from the time you walk out of the door of your project to the cafe set that's just there. I mean, you are so central. With
Yeah. It is. It's so central.
That is A-class real estate.
I'm very, very bullish on the area. Again, basic supply and demand. And then we've got a couple other ones that we're working in the background. We're doing a DA on. And just, always looking for different opportunities. So
I think also for the listeners, they've got no idea how much homework this guy's had to put into finding that site.
Yep.
I mean, he's done a lot of research, and I mean a lot of research. You knew exactly what the retail price of the land would be. You knew the value of the end product. You found out what people wanted. You went out and got it, and you're giving it to them.
Yeah, correct.
So that's you've just done everything correct by the book.
Yeah, it's. I guess that comes with a bit of experience, right? Like, making sure that you're sitting down and talking to as many people as possible, because what people in the development space, it's a little bit, built form is a lot different than land, right? Land is a lot less emotional. When you're doing built form, people get emotional over an idea, their design, their colors. I'm just like, tell me what the market wants. Do they want 8 toilets? Do they want 3 toilets? Yeah. Do they not want a toilet? Do they want, tell me what they want and we'll build it to their specification, right? Not to my specification, because I'm not the one buying it, as an example.
Yep.
And this is what a lot of people need to realize. Whereas when these guys are doing their land subdivisions, a block of land is a block of land, right? Whether it's 400 square meters, 500 square meters, 1,000 square meters, to them, they're trying to squeeze as many as possible, right? To make it efficient, which there's a lot less emotion. What are you guys doing, Carson, Shannon? Because I know that you guys had a couple deals that you guys thought were in the bag, and then not in the bag, and the roller coaster of emotion of going, I think I just made $10 million, to the point where it's like, actually, no, I'm making nothing on that one anymore because it's not there.
Some highs and lows.
There's always, I'm constantly hunting new projects, even though we've kind of filled our boots a little bit with what we've got happening, but we've got one in Lismore area, and it's approved for, I think, 71 lots. We've got balance 130 acres. We're trying to do a rezoning for another 350. So that 71 lots was a terrible layout. So we've lodged what's called a modification to the consent down there to change the layout and the staging plan. And we're hoping to maybe the back end of this year, beginning of next, start that first stage to start paying down some of the debt, get it unencumbered, because that rezoning play is going to be, we thought we had a buyer was going to come in and take us out, but we want to get the modification and get all those other lots done before we even explore that at the moment. So that's that site. Then we've got 30 lots DA approved in Tweed. That took 2.5 years to get approved, and now we're going for trying to get all the info. Like, I've had a hell of a time just trying to find the, because it's such an old area in Blamble Heights, the sewer water. We've been doing the potholing for the engineer to do the detailed design, to see, if people don't know, we've actually got to get a vac truck to suck down to, where the sewer power water is, and then the surveyor picks up the heights and bits and pieces to design to it. We can't even find the sewer and bits and pieces as trees overgrown. So it's been, and we've been measuring power lines because we want to lift some dirt up to rejig that, because it's quite a sloping site. I'm of the opinion down there, there's not enough builders to actually do split level builds. A lot of them went bankrupt during the COVID time. So we're actually spending a crap load on retaining to actually give them a product so the cookie cutter builders can do it. Otherwise, we won't be able to sell the dirt. So when we bought it, there were split level builders because it's taken so long. So that's that one. And then we're kind of in RFI with council on our 30 lot Mudroovar site at the moment. So that's progressing through quite nicely. And then we're doing our first potential built form site. So we bought a 1 acre medium density site in Upper Coomera. We settled in a few weeks' time. We thought it's the perfect one because we can do a 6 lot community title subdivision, and that's like, we know that makes money and works. Well, like, it's a medium density site, 1 acre, they're hard to find. Let's have a crack at doing a townhouse, the unit, the 32 one bedroom units, because if it doesn't work, we can go back and do the 6 bedrooms, which isn't always the case with that kind of medium density. So we're like, well, it's the first, yes, we'll lose some money on consultant fees, but we want to have a crack at trying, hold some stock, but also help this affordable housing scenario. So that's getting designed. We should get back this week.
It's probably one of the only pieces of medium density dirt that's not, well, it's not the only piece, but it's not right in the hustle and bustle where it's super expensive. We bought the property at a good price, so it makes some sense.
Yeah.
What about your big one?
Which one?
Lismore Country.
Yeah, that's the one I was saying before, the Lismore one. Yeah, so that's the 71 lots. That's the big, the rezoning that we're doing down there.
Yeah,
so
but
that,
how many at the end once you've got the whole thing approved?
I'll be 400
or more.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So there was a site that just got the guys 2.5 years ago or 3.5 years ago, just up the road from us, paid $3.5 million for a site, did an MCU. They just sold it for $60 million 3 weeks ago, which is crazy. So, the reason Shannon was late here was we finished a project in Jacob's Well. We had to do the, for everyone that doesn't know, we have to bond the landscape, and the builders keep knocking over the bloody trees. So we keep going out there, replace it. And then they said, we want to wait 3 months to see if the tree is going to grow again. So it's like the third time we've done this now. So we've mulched it in turf. So I'm checking my phone a sec to see if we get our five grand back. But that's, so that's been happening. And then we've been learning a lot about undermining. We've been looking at a lot of stuff in Ipswich at the moment. So we had a site that we spent 4 months on, 350 lots out in Rosewood. I was like, this is great. So there's just two fault lines running through it. We did some investigations. Basically, 80% of the site was a complete coal mine underneath. Mm. The estimates that I got, so I've done all this negotiation, was going to have a non-refundable deposit and all the rest. They said, about $5 million to fill it with like a concrete. End up being $15 million. So we're like 4 months of doing all that. So we've pulled out. So there's always something. We've got about 6 offers out there on sites at the moment. I'm just throwing offers out randomly. And then I'll let Shan kind of wrap it up with, we've got our 45 lot acreage subdivision that we're neck deep in at coming out the back end. So how's that tracking?
That's just my whole world at the moment. I've completely forgotten about salt and unemployable, and I'm just in construction. So no, it's good. We're coming out the other side finally. Wet weather has really, really kicked our ass on this one. Like we're about 45 days of rain delays at the moment on a project I want to finish in 4 months. So we've burnt some cash there, definitely in construction, just having machinery on site and whatnot, but we're finally up out of the ground. So we've got gravel going on today.
Nice.
So,
and how much import have we had in there roughly?
I don't know. It's 40 to 50,000, something like that.
Yeah.
I haven't surveyed it yet to work it out exactly.
And the trees at the moment, we've got like 73,000 rushes, sedges and trees going into that site. Mm. So how many people we got there? And like they've been there for a couple of weeks now, haven't they?
Planters. Yeah, planter-wise, we've probably got, it floats between sort of 8 and 10 people. We're about 50,000 trees in at the moment, little plants in. Oh, they're smashing it. No, probably 50-50.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And these young fellas, actually, they're from out Bow Desert Way. They can work.
Smash it.
Country lads. They're having a good go. So got to bring them in from out west. No, they're doing a really good job. Like import's done. We're not bringing in any more material now. Planting, we're going to be done by the end of this week. We've got a road closed at the moment, so the big set of culverts are going back in. We just finished pouring the head walls, so we unwrapped them yesterday, like a big brand new present. They look good. Start back filling over top of that and open the road in a couple of weeks.
Cool.
Gravel's coming in, and then we should be looking at asphalt in around 3 weeks, and then it's just all the road furniture, landscaping, signs, fencing, the last 10% that'll take. Where it really gets into the detail.
They're all pre-sold, so we just need to settle these out and pay back the loan, which would be nice.
Boys, honestly, for the first one, I think we did not too bad. This is
great to be here. Great conversation,
it's
guys.
It's gonna be a regular occurrence. We're gonna start off doing these, like I said earlier, if you guys have watched this long into it. We gonna do this once a month, a bit of banter, what's going on in our worlds.
I do apologize for being late. I won't continue to do that.
You're all right,
man. I'm just,
we'll let you off.
I'm actually just terrible with my schedule. It's not casting.
You're right. Well, we'll let you off this time. Funny enough, off camera we're starting and Carson thought Shannon was getting a car park because they just came from their site, and I overheard Carson's phone call because he's right beside me. And Carson's like, where are you? You're getting a car park? And Shannon's like, what do you mean? I'm at home. And as soon as I heard that, I'm like, this is going to be very interesting.
I thought you were pulling my leg. I genuinely thought it was 10 o'clock, so I apologize.
No, I appreciate that. So again, we'll do this once a month, guys. It'll get better and better. We'll talk about, you know, what we're up to in our everyday lives of property development. And Kevin will be joining us talking about what he's been doing, obviously, and sharing his wisdom. You know, we don't take this lightly, having someone like Kevin, who's a very, very busy gentleman, you know, building his business and having over 40 years experience in the industry. We're very humbled to have your attention and have you on. You're an absolute gentleman and love bantering with you. And again, guys, if you're enjoying this content, let us know, like, subscribe, and just tell people about what we're doing. And for those of you guys that want to know more about what Kevin's doing and how he's changing the future of housing, go to www.unemployable.com.au/high-yield-property-club, and him or one of his team will reach out to you and get you some more information. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you on the next one.
Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.